For Christmas this year, I want to reflect on a perhaps unusual text that most people probably just pass over. It's the very beginning of Matthew's Gospel, the long genealogy of Jesus. We hear about the ancestry of Christ stretching back over 40 generations. Most people looking at that would probably just skip it and say, let's get to the main story. But that would be a mistake, because the genealogy is theologically and spiritually interesting. We hear how God brings the Messiah precisely from this strange, dysfunctional family. There are in the genealogy some of the great heroes of Israel, but also quirky figures, odd figures, marginal figures, sinners. They're all there. And see, I think as we gather with our families at Christmas time, we exult in them, of course, and it's wonderful to spend family time. But if we're honest, we all know that our families are also kind of quirky, a little bit strange, a little bit odd. Well, how does God work through this? Watch the genealogy as the story of the Messiah is gradually told through this long history. I'll give you a couple of concrete examples. Jacob is mentioned, great patriarch, great hero of Israel. Jacob, though, was also somebody who wrestled with God in that wonderful scene where he struggles all night with the angel. But there are a lot of people listening to me right now who feel, yeah, that's me. I wrestle with God a lot. It's not all that clear to me, not all that easy. I have a lot of doubts and questions. I wrestle with God. Well, look, from that, God can bring the Messiah. That's not opposed to God's purposes. God can work precisely through that. We hear about Rahab. Rahab was a prostitute, but she's the one that protected the Israelite spies when they came into the Promised Land. She protected them, and that allowed the Israelites to conquer their first city in the Holy Land. So Rahab becomes the kind of hero of Israel, even though she was a prostitute. We hear about Bathsheba being one of the ancestors of Christ. Well, Bathsheba, of course, was an adulteress. She betrayed her husband Uriah. David had killed Uriah. This wonderful kind of soap opera unfolds. But there's Bathsheba, who's an adulteress. Are there people listening to me right now, I bet there are, who feel they've got some terrible sin they've committed? Maybe years ago, but some terrible sin that haunts them. And, well, no, I'm so defined by my sin, I could never be someone through whom God works. Come on. God works precisely through Rahab, precisely through Bathsheba. They become ancestors of the Messiah. We hear about someone like Solomon. Solomon, great king, one of the most impressive, important figures in Israelite history. He consolidates David's empire. He builds the great temple. And he's an adulterer, and he's an idolater, and he's someone who led to the downfall of a kingdom. Are there people listening to me today who are very successful, who've done great and important things, but also have, you know, sins, maybe secret sins that compromise them, that have done things privately that are undermining God's purposes, and they feel, well, I'm not really worthy, I'm dysfunctional. Okay, God found a way to work even through the sin of Solomon. Another figure I'd mention is Ruth. Ruth was a Moabite woman. She was not an Israelite. But she married into an Israelite family, and she, in that beautiful story told in the book of Ruth, is very loyal to her family and loyal to Israel, and she becomes the grandmother of King David. So here's an outsider, someone not part of the chosen people, who becomes a major, major player in the history of salvation. I bet there are people listening to me today who feel like outsiders. They don't quite fit in. They're not in the in-group. They're not part of the special people. Well, heck, God can work with that. God can work with outsiders as well as insiders. There's a couple of figures toward the end of the genealogy, Abiud and Zadok. Who were they? I don't know. I think anybody knows really who they are. They're some very obscure players. I bet there are people listening to me right now who feel, you know, I'm kind of a mediocrity. What have I accomplished? What have I done? I'm not all that good. I'm not all that bad. I'm just kind of a nobody. God works with nobodies as well. God finds a way to work even with those who are very obscure in the eyes of the world. All of these figures in the wild and woolly, dysfunctional family of Israel come together to produce the Messiah, Christ the Lord. I think that's a great consoling message for us who often feel that we're part of just a messy, dysfunctional family. Watch the odd way that God knows how to work. Here's a last connection. Hebrew people would have gotten this in the first century, and Matthew wrote his gospel for a Hebrew audience. He says there are 14 generations from Abraham to David, 14 generations from David to the Babylonian captivity, and 14 from the captivity to Jesus. You say, okay, that's mildly interesting. But if you're a Jew, you're used to the fact that your language, Hebrew, has a correspondence between letters and numbers. You know that the number that corresponds to David, David, is 14. And so the author is saying, David, David, David. And in fact, Jesus is announced as the son of David. Well, if you look at David, he sums up what I've been talking about. Maybe the greatest figure in Israelite history, the greatest king, the one that built the empire, the one that slew Goliath, God's great friend, and who killed Uriah the Hittite so he could have relations with Bathsheba. He's an adulterer. He's a murderer. So it goes in the economy of grace. So it goes that God works through saints and sinners, the insiders and the outsiders. He works through ambiguous people like you and me, like everybody, who are both saintly and sinful. And that's great good news. It's a proclamation of grace. And that, I think, is the great Christmas message.